Well, hey, how was your weekend? Hey, I had a good weekend too. I was down in Atlanta, Georgia. I was speaking at a campus ministry retreat down there. They have a pretty large ministry, and they've kind of become kind of a leader of many of the ministries in the South. And I thought, man, this will be a good chance. I've been down there before, but a good chance to see what they do and how they do things, and maybe glean some ideas. And do you know what I realized? Is I realized that I love this place. And I came back today, and I was just like, I want to give all of you guys this big hug. Like, I just love our students. There is something about you guys that I just absolutely appreciate so much more after being in a different place and actually seeing other things. And one of the things that happened this weekend, we had like five people at the retreat, got baptized, and it was awesome. And there was something about the environment of that place that was, I'm just not going to lie, it just seemed like it was a little bit of a spiritual, difficult place where it took a lot of work to create some atmosphere for people to know God. And God worked through it, and He sometimes has a way of just breaking through difficult situations. There's something about this place, and I have to say, it's you, it's these people, it's the leadership, it's Phil, it's the worship team, it's Ben, Haley, it's Michelle, it's our interns, that just help create this place to be a place where the Spirit of God moves smoothly and unforced, in an unforced way. And I was thinking on the way back, I thought, how unforced, or how forced does things have to be for people to come to know Jesus, or to come to a point where they need to surrender to Jesus? And I get this text, and it's kind of interesting. I get this text from Lindsay Gist that says, I just think I've been putting this off long enough, and I'd like to get baptized. Isn't that awesome? And so that's kind of what greeted me as I was getting back to town. And so I just want to let you know that she's excited, and we're going to have this baptism on Sunday at 3 o'clock. So if you've got some time, come over to the campus house this Sunday afternoon, and we're going to celebrate that. We're all pumped about it. Okay. Hey, well, what's been our series? What have we been doing? Something about
a story,
yeah. And we've been talking about this idea of story. There's three components to a story. What are they? First one?
Character.
A character that what? Wants something. All right? Yeah, love. That makes character. That's right. That was the first week. So let me just say it. The first week is a character, and your character is defined by who you love. And we talked about that. And we want to be people that love God because there's all kinds of fruit that comes from that that's really positive. And then we talked last week about a character is someone who wants something. And we really got serious about wanting something. And we had that big paper up front. We just kind of talked about specifically what is it God wants you to do? What do you want to do? And we wanted to write that specifically down. What's your dream? What do you want? Because a story is a character who wants something and overcomes conflict to get it. Tonight, we're going to talk about overcoming conflict to get it. And I think that's really it. That's really a story. And I'm going to tell you, if you don't write down a big enough dream, you won't have enough conflict to make your story worth repeating or worth telling. People want a big story. The bigger the story, the bigger the conflict, the better the story. And so tonight we're gonna continue to look at Nehemiah's life, and we see that Nehemiah, we know the story of Nehemiah. He got word that his people, many, many miles away, about 800 miles, were attacked, and their city was destroyed, Jerusalem, and the city, their protection, the wall was destroyed. And he got it in his heart that he needed to rebuild the city. And so he asked for permission, and he goes off to build this city. And we're going to look at some of the conflict. Do you realize, just a little backdrop before we get actually into the text, how much conflict there really was? Like, these walls were not just kind of knocked over. They were rubble. There was stone upon stone rubble that they had to work with to rebuild this wall. It took a lot of organization. It took a lot of materials. It took a lot of preparation. And Nehemiah headed the whole thing up. Nehemiah was the mastermind behind it. He took different tribes from Israel and he gave them different specific jobs. He took permission to get timber from a certain land and brought that in. And then, on top of all of that, he had to overcome all of the obstacles of the oppressors that are trying to stop them from building the wall. So they had people like standing guard and protecting the workers. And it was just an absolute difficult, difficult task. You want to talk about high obstacle, that's the one, high difficulty. And it created an opportunity for a great story. So it starts, and so he begins to build. And I'm going to kind of recap. We've already done Nehemiah 1, and we've done Nehemiah 2. Nehemiah 3, 4, and 5 really is what I just described in a lot more detail. And then chapter 6 comes, and it's almost like the second wave hits. And before I get to that chapter, I want to kind of tell you a little bit about my story, a little bit about what my big conflict has been, what my big dream has been. Because I need you to know that even if God is in your story, and I pray he is, much like Ben said before, if he's a part of building the house, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be easy. A lot of times we think, hey, God's in this, it's just going to be easy. I got a sign from God, it's going to be smooth. Signs from God usually give us a little bit of confidence to stay with it because the road's going to get hard. I'll give you a couple examples. I, at your age, had this dream. Had a dream of being a campus minister, of starting ministries that were going to be on a campus where I didn't keep people, where I always was sending people. That was just my dream. And I thought, you know what? The way the world's going to change for Jesus is not to have a big church where people come to me. It's to have a smaller, medium-sized church where I'm sending people out. And they're going to be doctors, and they're going to be lawyers, but they're going to be teachers, and they're going to be businessmen. And they're going to be moms, and they're going to be dads. They're going to be husbands, they're going to be wives, and they're going to change the world. And this is my dream. I want to do that to the best of my ability. And so at 20 years old, nobody's hiring me as a campus minister, believe it or not. I just get married. Maybe I'm 23 at that time, actually. Still nobody's hiring me to be a campus minister. And I think, you know what I need to do is I need to just practice this and start something in a foreign land. And so my wife and I had already met on a mission trip, and we thought, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go over to the Philippines, and we're going to start a ministry over there, a campus ministry. And we got this big idea and this big dream. We thought we were going to do this. And I was really excited about it. And you know what my big obstacle was? The first thing out of the gate that was really tough? Fundraising. I couldn't get anybody to give to it. I couldn't raise enough money for me and my wife to go to the Philippines. I'm like, man. And I prayed this prayer early in the week, like on a Tuesday. And I said, God, I don't recommend this, by the way. I said, God, I'm going to tell you. I didn't ask God something. I told God something. And that's not always a good thing. I said, God, if you want me to go to the Philippines, then you're going to have to give me $100, a committed person that's going to say, I'm going to commit $100 a month to your mission by the end of the week. And by Thursday, I pretty much forgot I prayed that prayer or stated this. It was a moment of frustration is what it was. Saturday night, I'm in my apartment. I go to bed. We get a knock at the door. We never get a knock at the door. I ring the doorbell. I said, what's going on? I get up, and it's my buddy down from the Bible college and his friend, him and his sister, Paul and his sister Lisa, come to our door. And they're all excited. We've got to come and talk to you about something. Well, what is it? What could possibly be so important? And they come up the steps, and they jump into the living room, and they're talking to us, and they said, we're at our church, and there was these people and this couple that you've never met that said that they're so excited about supporting a missionary. They've never done it. They get convicted that they need to support a missionary, but they didn't know anybody. And we told them about you guys. And they said, great. And I said, how much are they going to give? And he said, $100 a month. And I kid you not, I looked at the clock, and it was 11:59.
1 minute before the week was up. Now, that is a sign. That was a confirmation. That was God saying, hey, you need to go to the Philippines. And you know, that act of obedience and that hard work and that time that we went has proved to have fruit that has lasted till now. And we've got a handful of people here. We've got Brittany and Lindsay and Maggie and Isaac who are going to go again to the Philippines with me this May because we have a continued ministry and we take an offering for it every week because of that one trip that I took, I believe God has put in my heart to do. And it's really fun to look at that and you'll be like, yeah. Here's the thing you don't necessarily know. That was a year, and some of you have heard it. I think I even mentioned it here earlier this year, and I'm not going to elaborate on it, but it was a hard year. It was a year that we ended up getting pregnant and losing a baby at 22 months. It was a year that in the midst of that happening, somebody stabbed me in the back and took the guy that I wanted to be the campus minister. It was difficult things that I'm just like going to the God and saying, why would you bring me here to have this happen? It seems like it's a cruel joke. It doesn't seem like this is what you brought me here for. Certainly this isn't the plan. And yet it was. Coming here was a difficult thing for me as well. This was a hard transition. Had a lot of front-end signs from God where God... Actually, you might not know this. This was interesting. I found this out years later. Did you know that there was an opening for this spot, for this ministry? There was a campus minister here for 20-some years before me. And as he left, there was an open spot for an open interview for people to come and apply here. And I was in the Philippines while the application was going on. I missed my chance, and I didn't get to apply to come to ISU. So I never came. No? Another dude got the job. Out of a whole bunch of people that they narrowed it down to, one guy stood above the rest. And you know what he said? I don't think I want it now. And he walked away from it. And they opened up the interview process again. And then he came back and he said, I've been thinking about it. I don't know what I was thinking. I do want it. Well, it's kind of open now for everybody. And that gave me and my wife an opportunity, just enough time, to slide our name into the hat. And somehow they picked us. I look at that and I think, God was in that. And yet when I showed up, there are some details to a story that I probably can't tell full details of because there's people still in earshot in this community. It was hard. The only people that I knew and trusted that were here in town really didn't like me, and they really turned on me. And it got to the point where I didn't feel like there was a soul in this place, in this town, that would know me without first knowing these other people. And every word that they shared about me really was a lie. A flat-out lie that I couldn't defend. It's a hard place to be. And there were a number of times where I felt like throwing in the towel. And yet, persistence over time, God created a great work, and here we are. And I want to tell you something. Whatever that great work is, whatever that thing that you wrote down up here last week, there is going to be obstacles with it. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. Last week may have been a hard process because you had to kind of admit some things to yourself about what you actually want. But it's, at the same time, it's exciting. I don't want you to lose that excitement, but today I really want to tell you it's going to be hard. I want to talk about getting through the hard. And for many of you, you haven't experienced it yet. For many of you, it's really on the other side here. It's going to be in the next few years. I want you to remember this sermon. I want you to remember it because it's coming for you. There's an opportunity coming for you that's going to be great, but you're going to have to work hard. Working hard is part of getting any good story to come true. Now, I'm not talking about the work in the sense of doing the dishes and doing the laundry and those kinds of things that you need to do. I get that. That is a whole other topic and a whole other sermon. If you're not doing your dishes, please do them. That is what we'll call work. Tonight, I want to talk about a great work. Nehemiah called it a great work. His work on the wall was what he called a great work. I want to talk about that. Whatever that thing is that you wrote down last week, I want to write a movie that's going to change the world. That thing that you wrote down, I want to be a mom. I want to adopt some kids. I want to go to Africa. I want to change the world. Those kinds of things, those are the kinds of things that I'm going to call a great work. And that's what I'm going to address tonight, is a great work. Nehemiah, he's on his great work. He's already hit some very difficult things that I've already just described to you. And here's what you'll understand too, as you accomplish a great work, you're going to have waves, different stages of difficulty. This is like the second wave of difficulty, because what happens soon after he is there is the first thing that happens is he is mocked. You might receive some mocking from your family. The girl I talked about last week, our alum, Jamie, she's going to Africa, and she has the six-year-old that has high-need kids, and she needs somebody to tutor with her and be a nanny. And by the way, three of you have talked to me about that, which I think is amazing. She has got incredible bad feedback from her family. There's mocking that you might have to go through, depending on what your great work is. And that was what Nehemiah experienced. Are you gonna actually build something out of that pile of rubble? I think the quote there is, I think the mock in there, the trash talk from the day was, I don't think even a fox could stand upon two of your pieces of rubble or something like that. Didn't flow very smoothly there, did it? So mocking is one. There was a guy I met this weekend. His name's Greg. Greg is an intern at this campus ministry. None of his family are Christians. Greg is a smart dude, and you go to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, I'm telling you, it's a smart school. And you go there to get a high-paying job, and Greg is sent there by his family to get a high-paying job, and Greg decided he wanted to be an intern for a year, and his family was so opposed to it that they made him sign a contract to them stating that if you take this internship, you owe us $39,000. He's an intern. He went through the mockery and went through a price to follow the Lord to be an intern where he is now. That might be you. Let's read a little bit of our story. We'll pick it up in Nehemiah chapter 6. When Sanballat, now this is like the villain in the story, okay? Sanballat is this dude that's trying to stop Nehemiah from building the wall. And I just think he's got the best name for a villain, don't you? Sanballat! So when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, the rest of our enemies, heard that I had rebuilt the wall and that there were no more breaks in it, even though I hadn't yet installed the gates. So he's not quite done. He's got the walls built, but there are seven gates that he needs to finish. So when they heard that he had much progress made, Sanballat and Geshem sent this message. Come and meet with us at Kiphron in the valley of Ono. And when Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had rebuilt... We're doing that again. Next one. Next page. Okay. I think we messed a little part up there. They said, come and meet us. Okay? They said, come and meet us. And maybe it's not up there, but that's okay. I got it memorized. This is what his response was to them. His response was, I am, and it's a phrase that I taught you guys 2.5 years ago. It's a phrase I'm going to teach you guys even now. It's a new phrase that I want you guys to learn. Okay? It's one of those sermons that I think needs to be repeated. We need to repeat our relationship series, and we need to repeat this one, because you're in a stage of life where you need to learn this phrase. You ready for it? Here's the first part. Repeat after me. I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. Let's do it again. I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. Now here, when I say a great work, you guys are sounding, I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. There we go. Now we're preaching. This is it. This is good. All right. And that's what he tells Sanballat. He says, hey, I'm doing a great work. Why am I going to meet with you? I can't come down and talk to you. And Sanballat's like, dang it. He won't do it. And then this happens. Well, now you can go to that next phrase, that next slide. I know you're trying to fix it back there, but that's okay. We can move. Oh, is it fixed? No. Go back to the one more right before it. Yes. Four times they sent the message, and four times I gave them my answer. I'm gonna break this into actually 2 points. The first is there's gonna be distractions. If you have a great work, I'm telling you right now, some of you don't know what your great work is yet. I know that. I understand how you think. I understand how you procrastinate. I understand because that's how I am. And maybe you have not written your thing down yet, what we had up here last week, whatever your dream is. But if you have, I ask that you would stay the course with it. And if you haven't, or if you have, there are 3 things that you need to continue to do no matter what your dream is. You need to stay in tune with the Lord by having some alone time with Him. That solitude thing we talked about last week, it's huge. And talking to Him, it's huge. Reading His Word is huge. And hanging out with big dreamers is huge too. We talked about all 3 of those last week. You remember that? We need to hang out with those big dreamers. And you know where those big dreamers are at? They're in your small groups. If you're not in a small group, you need to get in a small group. Those small groups are with people that are doing life with you and are going to encourage you, and they understand you. You're in the same boat, and you need to be with people that want the bigger things in life. And people here want that, so you need to be in that. If you're not doing those 3 things, the other things are probably going to be a lot harder to find. And so maybe your great work this semester is just simply getting to that relationship. It's simply getting into that pattern. It's simply getting into an idea of making God big and me hanging out with those people and making a priority to be alone with God. And if you say that maybe part of your great work is that you right now need a degree and you need a certain grade point average to accomplish what your bigger dream is, and you know you need to study, and you know that if you don't set apart some time to do that and to accomplish that for your great work, you're not going to get your great work. You need to study. The little things need to happen this semester. And so maybe for you, it's 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock to 11 because, well, or 9 o'clock to 10, except for Monday night. And you need to do this every single night. You need to assign yourself to that. And I guarantee you, as soon as you do that, this is what's going to happen. Your roommate's going to come down, or the person down the hall is going to come down. They're going to be like, steak and shake run? Yeah, let's go. And you're gonna have the quick opportunity to just abandon whatever your plan of action is. And I want to challenge you, in that moment of distraction, we've passed mockery, now we're into distraction. We're going to say a phrase. And what is that phrase going to be? You got it. You got it. Doing a great work, and I can't come down. I like this part too. He says, 4 times they sent the message. 4 times. And 4 times I gave them the answer. He kept saying the same thing back to him. No, doing a great work, can't come down. No, doing a great work, can't come down. Doing a great work, can't come. Hey, guess what? I'm still doing a great work, and I can't come down. This was a phrase that Nehemiah knew, and a phrase that we need to get familiar with to avoid distraction and to avoid the repeated distraction. Let's say your great work has given up drinking this semester. Do you think you might have more than 4 opportunities to be tempted in that this semester? It's going to happen. These temptations, these opportunities, these voices, these distractions are going to come numerous ways. The next is going to be lies. Let's keep going. The fifth time, the same messenger, the same message, and Sanballat sent an unsealed letter with this message. The word is out among the nations, and Geshem says it's true that you, Nehemiah, and the Jews are planning to rebel. That's why you're rebuilding the wall. The word is that you want to be king and that you have appointed prophets to announce in Jerusalem. There's a king in Judah. The king is going to be told all this. Don't you think that we should sit down and have a talk? Let me sum up what he's really trying to say here. What he's saying here is, I know why you're rebuilding this, because you have a plan to rebel. You have a plan to kind of set some things in order. You want to be king. You're the one that's the prophet. And what he's doing is he's enticing him. Shouldn't we have that talk? All the while he's got a knife behind his back and he's ready to take care of business. It sounds kind of good. Like, hey, you need to defend yourself. I need to get in that argument. I need to get in that realm. I need to, hey, there are going to always be people speaking to you from the basement. Don't listen. You don't have to follow them. I sent him back this. There's nothing to what you're saying. You've made it all up. And he just doesn't listen. And this campus minister I hung out with this weekend, he's really, really out there. He's an eccentric dude. He's got a chew cup, and he's always spitting, and he's just kind of this dude. He's just, it's a little gross. I understand. And he just has a way about him that's just kind of funny and unorthodox, and I think he'd grow our ministry to about 10 people if he were here. But there, it kind of works. And I heard him preach last year when I went down there, and he's kind of got the southern accent. And I understand like every three words. He just kind of mumbles. He's kind of just talking. And he says, there's basement people. And there's balcony people. And he's going on about these basement people and balcony people. And my wife's sitting with me, and she's like, what's he? Oh, balcony. I didn't understand what he was saying. And so this thing's going on. He's kind of going on and on about this basement and balcony. There's people, in other words, there's people that are encouragers, and there's people that are nags. And he said, I got a lot of nags in my life. I got a brother-in-law that's always bugging me, and he's always criticizing me, and he's always saying negative things about me. He's saying I need to quit chewing, and I got to quit doing this, and God's never going to use me, and blah, 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 blah. And he says, one day, it was really bad, and he knew he kind of crossed the line, and he called me up, and he said, sorry, I said some things I shouldn't have, and I just want you to know that I hope you don't take that too personal, and I'm really sorry, and he said, what do you think he said the rest of the time? What do you think the rest of his phrase was? He goes, I don't know either because I hung up. And I was like, whoa, that sounds kind of mean. Well, this was his advice. He said, shut out the balcony people. And I just think this is, in a way, this is kind of what he's doing to Sanballat. Sanballat's got an argument. He's calling him a liar. He's calling him, he's trying to do this, trying to do that. And it's just not working. And he says, I'm not going to listen to it. So don't listen. Don't listen to the lies that might be coming for you. Next. They were trying to intimidate us into quitting. They thought, they'll give up. They'll never finish it. And I prayed, give me strength. And then I met secretly with Shemaiah, son of Deliah, the son of somebody, at his house. And he said, let's meet at the house of God inside the temple. Let's find safety behind locked doors because they're coming to kill you. Yes, coming by night to kill you. So he's got this private meeting with this dude who says, hey, they're coming to kill you. You got to hide out in the temple. Let's keep reading. I said, why would a man like me run for cover? And why would a man like me use the temple as a hideout? I won't do it. This guy is determined. I sensed that God hadn't sent this man. The so-called prophecy he spoke to me was a work of Tobiah and Sanballat. They had hired him. He had been hired to scare me off, to trick me, a layman, into desecrating the temple and ruining my good reputation so that they could accuse me. This was really tricky. And this was using the temple, using God's house as maybe an escape or an excuse to hide out so that he would not be as useful. I don't want to make a stretch here, but I really believe that some of your dreams, some of the things that God has called you to, are things that you can avoid by being in church. Oh, I'm just doing the will of God for a while. I'm just going to stay in church. I don't want you to hide out in church. Hear what I'm saying. The Lord works through his church, the people. And you should never abandon that. But you should also not use it as an excuse for you to hide behind what God has called you to. And I believe that is something that is possible for us to be people that really try to use the Christian world and the Christian terms and the Christian things to hide behind maybe the big thing that God might be actually calling you to. Here's what I want to end with. I want to end with this idea. I shared with you a few stories of pain and difficulty and things that I had to go through. But I also shared with you how there was a sign from God that kind of made me feel like I need to stay the course. And there's other areas of my life that that's really been true. As far as we know, as we read Nehemiah, that sign from God never happened. As far as we know, in this story, God is definitely someone he's praying to and definitely a part of the story, but there's not like this, let me give you a sign, let me give this outside miracle. It really is about one man who knew what was the right thing to do and he was determined to do it. And there are all kinds of obstacles that are going to come your way that might relate to Nehemiah's, they might not relate to Nehemiah's. But here's the reality. The reality is this. You need to know that if God's called you to something, whether the miracle's there or not, we need to hold the course, we need to do the action, and we need to understand there's going to be difficulty. And we need to be there for each other. We really need to have that encouragement. There's been many times where I've thought, early on especially, I got to throw the towel in. I cannot do this job. It's too big. And there's been more than one time where Ben has been the person who's looked me in the eyes and he says, no, this is going to be your greatest moment. This is going to be the time where God's going to use you the most. It's the time where he doesn't look like it's going to work and he says, this might be God's biggest story right now. We need to be those kind of people to each other. Tell your story to somebody. Tell your dream. Keep each other accountable. I hope that this starts to brew within our small group. Is there any more scripture? I think there might be a little bit. No? Okay. Let me finish that. Oh my God, don't let Tobiah and Sanballat get by with all the mischief they've done. And the same goes for the prophetess somebody. And the other prophets who have been trying to undermine my confidence. The wall was finished, I like this, on the 25th day of Elul. It had taken 52 days, and when all our enemies heard the news and all the surrounding nations saw it, our enemies totally lost their nerve. They knew that God was behind this work. 52 days, roughly a semester. And I kind of wonder what your next 52 days might look like, what your next stage might be. Don't say, my big dream is 5 years away, so I don't have to think about it for 3 more years. What are you doing this semester to accomplish the dream that God has put in your heart? You need to have a plan. And it needs to start now. And we need to tell some other people. And We need to share it. The end of Nehemiah. What I originally thought I was going to preach tonight is something I'm going to share with the guys at our guys' retreat. Girls. So, the thing that I want, if you girls really want to know the end, to know some parts of that, and maybe what my take is on it, ask the guys. Ask the guys after this weekend, and they'll tell you. We're going to sing one song, and when we do, we're going to pass these buckets. And know that these KFC buckets are going to support those ministries in the Philippines that were started so long ago for such a good reason. But also know that this is where we get to put our orange cards tonight. And it's important. It's really important that we all chime in and be a part of this community. So let's stand. Let's pray. Band to come forward, and we'll have one song. God, I want to thank you so very much for giving us dreams, for giving us stories, for giving us character and a desire to want something. And I want to even thank you for the conflict that is there, because without it, our stories are boring. So please help us to dream big, to have conflicts, to have things that we would pursue, the things that would be big, things that we could seek after. And I'm praying, God, that you would be very present in this whole process. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.